Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Welcome back to episode 5 of Finding Your Identity. This episode, I wanted to talk about task management, and I specifically wanted to talk about chunking out tasks and making them more manageable, because I've learned some lessons about this, especially when you have large workloads and you find yourself overwhelmed. There's some easy methods of dealing with that, and I think sometimes it's important to step back and evaluate your work. I've talked about the whole agile process and the retrospective in previous episodes, and I think one of the things that is hard to do sometimes is seeing the forest through the trees type of scenario, which is essentially being able to see what the end goal could be if you were to just break up the larger task into smaller tasks. So I'm going to call this, chunking out the work, just for reference, just because I needed something corny to call it. And that is what it is. So what, of course, is a good example, and I bring to the table because I've been leaning on these stories a lot, or this experience a lot, but in the restaurant business, you have to rely on this method a lot, because you start to actually learn that there actually comes a point where you really need to become efficient. Otherwise, you can fall behind really quickly. So what you end up doing is you essentially go through the tasks, which, if you consider each meal a task, preparing each plate, to go out to the window or to, ultimately get out to the customer. Each of those plates is really a task, and it's more of the larger task. Now, of course, if you consider everything comes in on a ticket, and there could be 4 meals on that ticket, so your largest task is obviously getting all 4 meals out, but you often will find that, a steak may come in, and, some chicken tenders and some nachos, a salad, and in a kitchen, it's not all in one station. So it may be a total order of 4 tickets, but, maybe the station I'm working, which I was often in the fryer station, the fryolator station, the deep fryers, which is just so greasy. And I can remember my pants would stand up on their own after working because the grease would just soak into my jeans. But anyways, the thing that I found was that, I'd have like 3 or 4 items on a ticket. It could be I needed to make the fries for the burger, right? And so the burger is made in one station, and I'm making fries fresh for the burger. So I've got a small part of that plate. Then I'd have potentially a meal, like if somebody would order, some potato skins as an appetizer, and that was a plate that I had to put together completely on my own. Or someone would order a chicken tenders meal, and so they'd be the chicken tenders meal, and maybe I had to also put fries with that, or some other fryer item that might be there. Whatever it was, I had to combine it together or do something to plate it. And so what often, I'd have to do is these tickets would come in, and you have to quickly look at the ticket and scan and figure out exactly what are the items that you need. So, you're going to use an opportunity to chunk out there, because I look at that ticket and I go, okay, there's 4 of them that have French fries, right? All 4 of those plates need French fries. There happened to be one of them was an appetizer for potato skins. Another one was a combo, which had, 3 chicken tenders, but those tenders actually had to go get passed down to another station because somebody else was actually putting the whole thing together, because the other 2 parts of that were actually plated at a different station. So you'd find yourself, you know, constantly having to figure out what exactly needed to be put together, you know? So I would be constantly in my head trying to chunk this out and think, okay, you know, I've got four orders of fries and I've got a bag of fries, which, you know, can do six orders or 10 orders or whatever it was. So I'm going to put that bag of fries in. I'll have a couple extra for the next meal because these tickets are just coming in. So I've got this, you know, four meals on this one ticket, and the register thing is spitting out another meal, and like maybe two or three of these come in at one time. I mean, when you're busy and it's a Saturday night, it gets crazy and it's hot, you know, you're super hot, but it could be that, you know, you've got these tickets just coming in nonstop. And I worked the front of the station, which meant like I was kind of the lead on that station, and I had somebody else who was actually dropping stuff. So I'd be yelling back, you know, drop me three fries, drop me an order of potato skins, drop me some tenders. You know, I'd look at it and I go, okay, I got the combo. I've got a meal with tenders. So, okay, so, you know, drop me 10 tenders. Or I'd be trying to think ahead. Okay, you know, we're coming up into a rush. So drop me, you know, 20 tenders because I know those suckers are going to go fast, and drop me, you know, three bags of fries because I know that those are going to be going like fast. So you're constantly trying to think as much as you can ahead and at what's going on now, and you're getting everything going. You know, you get everything in the fryer and you got to get everything going because, you know, you need everything to be cooking so that you know everything's ready when it needs to be ready. You know, because some chicken tenders could take 3 minutes, but potato skins could take 6 minutes. You know, fries generally I think took about 2 to 3 minutes. You could have something like egg rolls, which could take 8 minutes. You know, all this stuff is frozen. Most of the things are frozen. They actually had, I'm thinking specifically of when I worked at Chili's, but they had this chicken tender thing they call the crisper, which we had a hand batter and fry to order. So these were not frozen. These were, you know, these are chicken that were just thawed out and kind of sitting in containers and were, you know, cold, and you had to dip them in flour and then batter and then breading and drop them individually into the fryer and get those going. And that could take time. And that was actually a pain sometimes when you had, because some of those were part of other meals. And yeah, so you can kind of see the pattern here. Is it's really like you're trying to figure out how to chunk this stuff up so that you could do it. But this is really just separating out the ticket at this point. You know, it isn't really truly like chunking, as I came to learn how to kind of chunk things. Because, you know, I, as a ticket was coming in, I'm just yelling out the stuff that I need. But, you know, often you'd get buried because all of a sudden everything would be ready at once, more tickets were coming in, and you'd need to be plating while you're also needed to call out the new things that came in. And sometimes you had a meal that required something from another station, so you got to call down to the other stations to have them make some part of your meal, or you're gonna have to actually physically deliver something over to another station. And so what I found was one of the most beneficial approaches to this was to essentially weight things with a priority in the time that it came in, and think of it in terms of, okay, do I need to put this down right this second? Like, do I need to cook that yet? Because remember, some of the stuff takes less time, but you know, you don't want to forget it, because that's your critical mistake, is when you get to a point where, you know, you're actually forgetting and you're thinking, oh my gosh, like now I got to put something down that takes 8 minutes, like egg rolls, and I'm going to be freaking out because it's going to be late. And, you know, that's what you don't want to do. So you don't want to forget to put stuff down, but you got to time stuff just right. So I had the way I chunked out these things is, you know, each plate obviously had its individual pieces, but I would treat it as, okay, the ticket came in, and let's just say it's the start of the rush. You know, this ticket came in, and I would immediately start to think, what can I get ready for myself ahead of time, like right now, because you can't just have stuff like just sitting around. But like, I could go dish out a whole bunch of sauces, ranch dressing, barbecue, honey mustard. I could get those things lined up, and then I'd have sauces. So when I go to plate this, I don't have to sit there and do that extra scoop at the time that I'm plating it, put in the window. I can actually reach and grab some of the pre-made ones. I could also lay out plates ahead of me. If I knew that I had, you know, 10 meals that are about to come into the queue, I could get them laid out. I could have my individual sauces in place so that I, you know, was ready to go, and so that I could recognize which was which plate. You know, I'd get my vegetables or, you know, side dishes that were didn't require to be cooked right away because they were, you know, just staying warm, like soups or some of the like chili and stuff like that, or hot vegetables. You know, they were steamers that essentially they were just sitting in. So I would be chunking these tasks out like that. Like, I would say, okay, like, what's the, let me do the prep work, right? So my first task is prepping for what's about to come, you know? And then I would turn around and I'd say, okay, I know, like, part of my job working at the station is I have to put in all those raw chicken pieces and do all the battering and breading and get those cooking. So I'd wait, and I knew, okay, I'm going to have about 15 of them that are going to come up, but those things only take like 2.5 minutes to 3 minutes. So I'll get my plates all set up for the next couple orders. And then I'll turn around and I'll do my chicken. Okay, so now my chicken's down and that's cooking. Okay, what's the next thing? Now I'm going to look down and I'm going to see what are the dependencies that other people have on me or I have on other people. And I'm going to start making sure that that stuff is set up. So now that task is moving and they know what I need or I know what they need, and that's going. And now food is starting to be done and you're hearing timers go off. And, you know, my guy that's basically just dropping stuff in the fryers and watching all the timers and then, you know, getting stuff out into drip containers so that the oil can drip off of them. And we had these, I guess they were kind of like an egg crate material, but they worked wonders to kind of absorb the fryer oil and the grease without it actually seeping through and coming onto your hands, like, and getting like the oil on your hands. Although you're always wearing gloves too, but having to change your gloves for a dumb reason, that takes up time. So, you know, a lot of times you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, okay, what can I do to prevent time loss? You know, did I stock the fridge or the freezer or the steam tables or the sauces or the batters or whatever it is? Like, you know, that's important. Like, you make sure, because there's going to come a point where your fridges that are on the line are only so big. You're going to run out of stuff. When you're super busy, you'll start to run out of stuff. So you actually will get to a point where you're going to have to run off the line to get stuff. But, you know, if you're lucky, you've got, you know, somebody who's actually going to do the running for you. But sometimes you got to go get it yourself. You just ran out of sauce and you got to run all the way back to the dry stock room and pick up that sauce. But anyway, so you see what you develop and you get into this rhythm is you start to understand, okay, I'm going to take all the tasks in front of me, which is required in order to make this meal come together and get all those plates in that one ticket together. And you're breaking it out into the smaller pieces, you know, plating them and prepping the sauces, you know, cooking the individual items, you know, as a side thing, making sure that you're stocked up, or, you know, planning when you're going to go run to get more of it because you see that it's low. You know, it's like all these things are now like smaller attainable tasks. And in worst case, you know, scenario, you can sacrifice a task, I should say, not like you could push it off for a little bit longer. Like, that sauce could probably get you like three more orders, and you don't have to worry right now about running off and refilling it. Even though if all the, you know, you're kind of risking it, you're going to roll the dice there, because if a ton more tickets came in and you really couldn't run off the line, you're going to be in trouble and things are going to be on hold, because, you know, you're getting to a point once you get into that rhythm and stuff is flowing where you're just plating stuff on existing plates and putting stuff in the window and you're calling new things and you're cooking the new things, but you've come up with your rhythm, at least like you know, it became the same thing over and over once you did it enough times. But, you know, essentially you were coming up with your game plan and your task chunks. And once you've got those in place, you know, because it could be that you're running a special, like what if it's a chili special, Frito pie special, you know, where you got to have bags of Fritos that you got to put in the bottom of a dish, put the chili on it and put the cheese on it, which by the way is just awesome, with your whatever sprinkled cheese and sour cream and all that fun stuff. But that could be a special. That could be something that you don't do every night. So now that you got to build that into your routine and you got to start to think, well, you know, do I have enough of the chili since this is a special? Like, do I have stuff sitting in the steam tables that will cover me there? You know, so those are kind of the things you gotta kind of think of. And you know, I'm not trying to make it sound like you know, being a short order cook is like the hardest thing in the world, but there takes a little bit of skill, and you kind of got to build your skill sets and learn how to fall into rhythms if you want to be good at it, if you want to just survive, you know, and not be the one that's responsible for crashing the restaurant, as they call it, because you get so far behind. And sometimes you just, you know, you'd have fryer related item specials that you would just be slammed because they put a special out for something that's just making it so your station is just cranking out the most stuff. And that could be rough, you know, or they'd be running a steak special and the grills are just so full that they can't even fit more steaks on them, you know? And so you need to scale back in what you're producing because you have to be considerate that those steaks, there could be steaks that are so far behind that, like, you don't want fries to get cold. You know, you want to make sure that, you know, you're also timing it with those other stations. So these are all things you have to consider. But, you know, in terms of what I'm talking about, in terms of chunking out the work, like, I feel like this is a perfect example of using that method to figure out how you're going to accomplish the greater task. And, you know, I think there's some important lessons that I did learn while working there in the restaurant business. And it's different in every restaurant because the stations are different. The people you're working with are different. You got to always rely on different people who have different skill sets and different strengths, you know. But ultimately, if you can figure out how to break up the tasks so that they're more manageable, you know, then oftentimes you'll find yourself, you'll be able to get to a point where you can accomplish the things you need to accomplish in a, you know, in an efficient manner, in the most efficient way possible without it being so intimidating. I think that's the biggest thing that I kind of learned is when you start to look at it and you think 20 tickets just came in, you know, 10 of those tickets are parties of six. That means that there could be, you know, 10 items on that ticket. You know, there's three appetizers and there's, you know, all these other entrees and side dishes. And, you know, you've got a massive ticket that everything has to go out at the same time because you don't want to start sending stuff out when it's ready, unless they asked for it that way. Like sometimes the kids' meals would go out ahead of time. But, you know, that can be really intimidating, especially if you aren't really prepared. And so if you think of it in terms of chunking out the tasks, like first you're taking that party of 20 and now you've chunked out what work is important to do right now versus what's going to be important, you know, 5 minutes from now. What's the prep stuff that you can do ahead of time, like getting those plates ready, getting the sauces ready? You know, you're chunking this stuff out so it doesn't seem as intimidating as, oh my gosh, you know, we've got this huge party and we've got all this food that we've got to get together and get out at the same time so we don't make people mad, you know. So it's a lot to do with just, you know, making you more comfortable with the big intimidating task, you know, by just breaking it up, and you're breaking it up into something manageable because it's, you know, it can be hard. And I know from experience, obviously, that it can be hard. And, you know, sometimes chunking can also be very valuable when you need somebody else to come and help you and bail you out, which would happen. And sometimes a manager would have to come back and help me. And because I've chunked it out in a way, I could say, listen, you know, do this small task, like get those sauces ready, or you do, you know, all those crisper thingies, like chicken crisper thingies, or, you know, go refill all those things that I know are going to be empty in a few minutes. Now, once I've broken up into smaller tasks, now I can actually distribute that, you know, and that's kind of my next thing to talk about, is to kind of lead into how you can break things up, so that you can then collaborate with other people and it becomes more efficient. Now, pulling from my web development experience, I think this, you know, chunking concept is it's really been around for a long time. Like, and it's not really called that. Like, I think in a collaborative workspace or a collaborative project, you know, you have to break things up into tasks. Otherwise, one person's doing the job and the other ones are just kind of standing around with their thumbs thumb wrestling. And I think that's the saying, right? So you got to chunk stuff up. And I can remember I was doing freelance work for this company, and they had this project, and it was like all of a sudden a big project, and I think it was for some online doctor type website, type of thing. And we and my buddy called me up, and he's like, hey, we got this big project. Do you want to be a part of it? We're putting together a team. And I said, hey, yeah, I enjoy that. That'll be cool. So, you know, he said, okay, we're all in different parts of the country. So I was like, well, that'll be fun. That'll be interesting. That was kind of the first time that I had experienced that. But I said, sure. And he said, okay, so we're going to use Google Hangouts for our group discussions. So created the group chat there. And we were using GitHub as a code repository website. So it's basically where we could store our code, and it's meant for collaborative workspace. Actually, I think about it now, it wasn't github.com. It wasn't the actual GitHub site. It was actually Bitbucket, which uses the underlying Git technology that GitHub uses. But it's the same concept. It's for collaborative coding, but you know, Bitbucket was essentially where we were all putting our code into that online cloud space, if you will. And you know, it allowed us to collaborate in that way, because I put it out there and someone else can go and look at it and work on it, and we can kind of pass it back and forth, and you wouldn't run into problems with you know, stepping on someone else's toes, or you know, accidentally overwriting somebody else's code or work. So, you know, it was the choice for how we were going to handle the coding. And you know, we also were using some other platforms. So Bitbucket's like made by this company called Atlassian, and they're a big company. They make this other product called SourceTree that was essentially how you can visually, it was the graphic user interface, the GUI. That's how you could actually visually see the code that you were working with, the commits, I should say, or every time you push the code and you committed it, they call it, you pushed it out to a repo. It was just an interface for seeing that in a visual manner. And we were using that. And so we had our Hangouts, and we had the Bitbucket for the code. And we also, I think we used Hangouts also because we could do the group video chats, and then also do our instant messaging through it as a group. But you know, we all got on the on the phone, or we got into a conference call, and we started saying, okay, well, what are we going to do here? And so we basically started with, this is the product that we're trying to make. And so then we said, okay, we want to make a website. Let's just I'm just going to oversimplify it, but we want to make this website. It's going to do these doctory things, you know, allow doctors to talk to patients, let's say. And so you think, okay, well, that's going to be a, you know, making a website. So just do some HTML and build a web page, because that's what it, you know, entails. But it was a lot of requirements behind it. You know, this, it needed to do X, Y, and Z, and so on and so forth. So we all kind of sat down and we started making lists. I mean, not literally sat down, but figuratively, we were sitting around and, you know, through the video chat and using some technology to essentially have like a virtual whiteboard. We basically chunked out this website build, this thing that we were going to develop. And we said, okay, so we're going to chunk this out, and then we're going to kind of weigh what the tasks are, you know, like so we had to build tasks around like each of the items we need to build. So we said, okay, website, okay, well, website is going to have a home page, right? But it goes even more granular than that, because you need to have the logo section, this header, and then you're gonna have this middle section, and you're gonna have this footer section, right? So just chunking that out, that's three sections. Then you go into each of those sections and it's like, okay, who's going to handle gathering like the content that needs to go into that footer, and so on and so forth. You're like basically breaking down all the pieces of a website. But that was just the homepage, and there was more to it, because it was the fact that they wanted some two-way communication between the doctors and patients. So we had to essentially build a system for messaging. And a lot of it, we were told we had to build from scratch, because we couldn't use existing things, but to some degree we were actually able to leverage WordPress, which is a content management system, in combination with some other layers of templating software, and not to get too deep in the weeds here, but essentially we were leveraging what we could for technologies, but we still needed to build this custom messaging interface, because it was so customized, and there was nothing that really existed there, because it had to, you know, intake the message, but then it had to put it in a queue, because there was going to be multiple doctors, and a doctor could then go into the system and pick up the message, but then it had to take it out of the queue so that no other doctors would take it, because it was already being handled. So you were, had this kind of state management of the message, and then, you know, the patient, and then the notifications that were being sent out to the patient and to the doctor that the connection was made, and every time, you know, there's any back and forth. And so it was kind of involved. So we had to chunk out that task, and it's okay, well, you know, how are we going to do that? You know, I happen to have a lot of experience with handling some of this similar type of functionality, so I volunteered to kind of take that, but it wasn't just me, because I was working with somebody else. So I said, okay, I'm going to work on the stuff that does the, you know, the backbone functionality that's making this work, but you're going to work on what this actual interface looks like, and, you know, what's the color scheme and all that stuff. And so now we've brought this down into the smaller size, a smaller chunk, from big website to the different pieces of the website to now this is one little tiny corner of the web page, but now you take that and it's become a big task. So now we got to chunk that out. Now we split it up to, I'm going to handle the back end, back office type of stuff, and he's going to handle the front end interface type of stuff. And now that we've broken those two things apart, now I need to chunk it out even further, because, okay, I've got the communication going to the doctor, and then communication coming back to the patient, and then this queue system. So, you know, you're constantly just looking at it and you say, okay, how can I break this down further and further and further, you know, to the point where it's small enough and it's manageable. And one of the things that, you know, is always beneficial is being able to check something off and call it complete. And, you know, for me, I was able to knock out one part of it, which was, you know, essentially syncing up with a database or getting that whole piece of it, you know. And I'm like, okay, that'll take me about a day to do that, and then I'm going to create these services to communicate back and forth, and then I'm going to build this queue system and so on and so forth. And each of those tasks written down on a piece of paper, I could check it off and I could go, okay, I'm done with that. And now what you actually have is, say you have 20 tasks and you just checked off five of them, you know, you're looking at that and you're like, I'm 25% complete now. Now you can actually, you know, put a metric to the task that you're working on, and you can report back because you're constantly checking in with your other teammates. And this is actually where the chunking is very powerful, because now it actually can give you an idea as to where you actually stand in terms of completing that project and the work that you're working on. And so now you're saying, I'm 25% complete. And then you're going back and you know, I'm 25% complete of this work. And I estimated that it's going to take me 20 hours. And so I've got 15 hours worth of work left. And this guy over here has 10 hours of work total, and he's 50% done, you know? And so now he says, you know, so now he's got, you know, 5 hours left. And now all this stuff is going on in you know, tandem. So, you know, my 15 hours and his 5 hours, like his 5 hours could be overlapping my 15 hours, right? But when you start to actually chunk it out like that, now you can start stepping it back up and measuring those number of hours. It was 20 hours for this piece and 10 hours for this piece and 5 hours for this piece. And then you know, build this out into the bigger, larger project plan. And that large task that you're working on can be quantified, like in terms of the work that's being completed. And now you can actually go back, especially when you're talking to clients and they want to see this, you know, or anyone who's a stakeholder in getting this done, you know, the person who's getting their meal, you know, you're actually able to quantify how much time is left in something. You know, I did, you know, forgot to do, put something down when I'm cooking that meal. And unfortunately, I know it's going to take 8 minutes to complete that task because it's got to, and it's nothing I can do. It's got to cook, but it's quantifiable, like in that sense that you can say it's going to take 8 minutes to complete that task. So now you can report it back to that customer. I'm sorry, it's going to be 8 more minutes. You know, like, would you like blah, blah, blah in the meantime, because we're sorry, and it'll be on the house, whatever it is, you know, or you go back to the client with the project like this and you can say, well, you know, our guys are, as a total group, you know, 35% complete with the project, you know, because of all the other individual tasks all kind of added up and how many hours we said total. And then, you know, you do all the math out. And so now, you know, it goes beyond just you and you feeling comfortable being able to complete the task, but now it's something that's measurable in a sense that you can go back to the client and actually say, hey, this is how much we've done and this is how much is left, you know. And this becomes very important when you need to pivot. You know, I think that's kind of the next big thing when it comes to chunking. I call this the next big thing because I think it's important to understand that things go wrong and it happens often. And sometimes you just can't rely on things to go the way you expected. So, you know, by breaking things into smaller tasks, you can, you know, or chunking things out, like you can kind of insulate yourself from the damage that might be caused. Now, for instance, you know, when it comes to the kitchen item, like let's just say a plate fell off the counter and that had the steak and that had, you know, steamed vegetables and asparagus, right? Which can take 5 minutes to cook. And, you know, you have to cook it just right. Otherwise, it could be too soggy or it could be undercooked. And so let's just say that scenario was the plate fell on the ground and the entire meal had to be recooked. Now, let's just say for sake of argument, like every single plate was on the cutting board and all hanging on the edge. And maybe this is not the best example, but my point is that you've chunked out like all the other pieces of it. And so really, like, you lost that one piece of it, like that one plate, but like you could put the other plates up and you could have those sent out and you could get them to the customers and you can explain, you know, that something happened and they had to remake it. And, you know, hopefully they're forgiving and they're understanding because, you know, hopefully they've listened to other people talk about how the restaurant business is kind of stressful and a challenge. It's not just magical. There's no magical George Jetson type of food dispenser, you know, that the stuff just comes out of. Like, real human beings have to actually make this, and it takes a collaborative effort, especially when you're, you know, not just getting potato skins that come in a package that can just be fried and then put on a plate. But, you know, I think knowing that you don't have to make the entire meal over. Now, if a waitress had the entire meal on a tray and tripped and the entire tray fell, that sucks. And that's unfortunate. But you just go back and you figure out how to fix it. I mean, it really sucks. It's happened. I mean, I've seen it happen plenty of times. And the kitchen, you know, often is upset about it because they know that, you know, it just took 10 minutes to put that whole big meal together. And it's unfortunate. But, you know, I think my point is, what I'm trying to illustrate is that, you know, you have that small task which was chunked out so that it could be kind of put together again in that small form. But the bigger task that you're working on is still like in play. It's still moving forward. And in the example of the software and the website, I mean, that we were building, you know, what came back was the time frame changed and we needed to deliver something. And we had chunked things up in such a way that we were building and delivering these small pieces of it. And they basically said, we want to go live sooner. So we decided to, you know, take out some functionality. I think it was an FAQ type of section, like a live FAQ that, you know, once a question was asked through this system and the doctor answered it and then pushed it out there, that it would then get shifted over and form this searchable FAQ section. And we basically said, you know, that was going to take another X number of hours, you know, 20 hours, 50 hours, I forget what it was, but we brought that back to the client and they basically said, well, no, let's not do that now. You know, so I think that was kind of a critical part of handling the project in chunks, because, you know, let's just say we did this the wrong way and we had broken things up into tasks and we had broken things into chunks, but we didn't chunk them out in a way that each of these little components were done at the same time. We chunked out, you know, two parts of this 5-part component and 3 parts of this 7-part component. And then you get to the end and you need to cut something and now you're in trouble. So, you know, it's like there's got to be some kind of methodology to chunking stuff out so that you're actually spitting out these individual components that are essentially what you'd call like releasable or ready for the public. And, you know, you've actually gotten to the point where you can actually decide to not pick up that last thing or to stop work on that last thing, shift your focus on these other things so that you could wrap up the little details that might be left of those components. But you don't have to go fill in, you know, tasks 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of that 10 piece component, you know. So I think that's sometimes a critical aspect of chunking things out. You gotta recognize how to chunk it out in a logical way. And then, you know, the biggest thing that I think is a takeaway is being able to chunk things out so that you could feel good about what you've accomplished and you could feel like you're accomplishing something, because you don't want to constantly feel like you're just never going to get out of the weeds. You know, you don't want to feel like it's never going to end. You know, sometimes you just feel like you're drowning because you're trying and you're trying, you're trying to complete something and you never feel like you're really accomplishing anything. And I think it's a, you know, critical if you want to be successful to chunk things out in a way where you can complete tasks or chunks of this and feel good that you're actually getting towards a goal. Like losing weight, you know, is another thing that you could, you know, set smaller goals, you know, so that you could lose 5 pounds and you can feel successful about losing 5 pounds. I think it's the same thing when it comes to work and chunking out tasks, because you could do, you know, 6 of the 10 tasks and actually feel good about completing those 6 tasks. So I think that's, you know, really what I was trying to get across, what I was trying to chunk out in this episode. Just that was very labored, but I'm going to stick with it. But, you know, I kind of broke this up into a couple different stories in a couple different ways, because I really felt like, you know, the takeaway should be that it's, at first, it's recognizing that you need to chunk stuff out. And then the second thing is, you know, finding out, you know, how to chunk stuff out in a logical way so that you can then, in the third case, you know, potentially pull back on something or wrap something up and put it out there for whatever consumer or whatever, whoever's going to be, you know, consuming that and have it be, you know, not a complete loss or not like you have to abandon the entire project or task or whatever it is, where you can actually feel like, you know, I can cut it off right here and call this good and feel happy about this and feel proud of this work. Now I feel like I'm done talking about chunking out tasks. I feel like I feel proud of what I just talked about and just, you know, accomplished everything I was looking to accomplish with this episode. And so, you know, I just want to thank everybody for listening to this episode of Finding Your Identity. I hope that I see you back here again next time. I'm definitely making a list of all the people who didn't listen to my podcast. It's a pretty big list, but thankfully there's technology for making big lists. And until next time, this is Finding Your Identity. I enjoy telling random stories. It's fun. So I'm going to tell you another story right now. I hope you enjoy. There was this one time that I worked in a graveyard. I actually was a grave digger for a period of time. And it was because my grandfather actually was a curator of a cemetery. So I worked for him when he had jobs, mostly in the summertime, because they couldn't actually bury bodies in the wintertime because the dirt is too hard. But I was hired by him to do regular graves. I mean, more or less they used a backhoe, and my job was just to jump into the 6-foot hole, pray that they didn't cover it up with dirt while I was still in there, and clean off the edges and square it out so that they could get the vault in there, which in turn holds the coffin or casket. And one time my grandfather said, you know, I'll give you $75 to do a crematory plot. And of course, you know, this is when I was a teenager, so I jumped at the chance for $75. So he said, okay, here's the deal. We're going to go down to the plot, and we were not too far away from the cemetery where they lived. So we drove down there, and he's telling me while we're driving, we're going to go down to the plot. I'm going to show you where the plot is going to be, and you're going to have to dig this 3-foot deep hole, and you're going to have to make it, I think it was roughly 2 feet in diameter. Maybe it was 3 feet in diameter, but he gave me some measurements. He says, you're going to have to dig it out really nice, you know, so that the box fits in there, because it's a box going into this round hole. And he's explaining it to me, and I'm like, I got this. I was like, it's digging a hole. Well, how hard could it be? So he tells me to go and get the shovels. And so I go down. This is after we pulled into the cemetery and parked. I go get the shovels and I come back up and I said, okay, you know, what do you want me to do? And he said, well, follow me. So I had my smaller shovel. I had a deeper shovel and then a smaller shovel for rounding off the edges. And he said, okay, here's the plot. He said, listen, he's like, you need to dig it. Here's the dimensions. He's like, you know, get that dug. But he said, first, you're going to cut off the sod top of the grass so that it can then be placed back on and look like it really wasn't disturbed, and it'll, you know, take to the ground and just root itself so that the grass wouldn't look disturbed. And so I said, okay. And I did that. I cut my sod clump top off and I put it off to the side, and then I dug the hole and you know, cleaned it up, and I had my nice pile of dirt next to it, which was somewhat behind where the actual hole was. And you know, the husband of the wife who had passed away, who I think the woman was in her like 80s or maybe 90s, her husband was coming to watch me bury her, essentially, and which isn't super uncommon, but a little strange. So my grandfather said, you know, you got to be respectful of that. But a couple things that he drilled into my head before the guy showed up was, you need to make sure, you know, that you've cut that sod, but that sod won't take if you really don't pack it down really good. You know, it needs to essentially like re-sow it into the ground so that the grass will grow. And he said it to me a few times. So I'm thinking, I got this. I'm going to do this really well. You know, this is digging a hole. Big deal. So the husband shows up. This after I dug the hole, husband shows up and he's standing there and it's very quiet. And, you know, it's very calm at the cemetery and there's nobody else around and he's kind of solemn. And, you know, I think it wasn't a surprise or sudden that his wife was going to die. I don't think it was a shock, but he was obviously sad about it. Can't blame him. And so I was standing there kind of off to the side, just kind of leaning on the shovel, and my grandfather was having a conversation with them, and my grandfather knew the lady too, so they talked for, you know, 5 minutes, and then he gave me the nod, the signal he told me he was going to give me to proceed, and he had me take the box, put the box in the hole, and I started to gently put dirt on top of the box. All I made sure I got all around the edges first so that there was no pockets of air that could sink down, and I made this thing look beautiful. I mean, I put that dirt in there beautifully, and I got that hole filled up, and I had a little bit of room for that sod, and I put the sod on top. I patted it down with my shovel, and I'm like, this isn't really taking. This is not what he told me to do. So I proceeded to jump up and down on the patch of sod just to make sure that that thing would seed correctly and it would grow. And I'm doing this, and my back is turned to the man and my grandfather, and I'm jumping, and I seem to jump and turn until I'm facing my grandfather, who had this horrified look on his face, giving me the signal to cut it out. And the man, whose wife I was just dancing or jumping on her grave, the man is just looking at me completely baffled at what the heck was going on. And I think my grandfather tried to kind of explain that he overemphasized to me about making sure that that thing was really well seated so that it would, you know, grow properly and there wouldn't be any disruption in the grass growth. But I'll never forget that. And, you know, it's an interesting story. Not many people have that kind of a story, but I figured I'd share that in today's episode.